Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on caffeine. When we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments, because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions, and they're now banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they teach the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national consciousness. Now, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and had advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there is still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the benefits that we receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether you call it the Mosaic Law, or the Law of God, or the Common Law, or Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which is the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, informative, entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for your free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about caffeine. The last olive in the jar are the politics and the pushers. Why is it that we have a caffeine problem? We have pushers that are pushing a product, an addictive product. That's what's made it the world's, well, at least in the United States, I won't say the world, but at least in the United States, it's our number one drug. Now, the thing that changes an herb to a drug is the synthesis of the drug. When you take the coffee bean off the tree, grind it up, steep it, and boil it and drink the goods, that's an herb. But when you put it through a chemical process with the express intention of taking out of that coffee bean a specific chemical substance, in this case caffeine, we convert that into a drug, and when we do, we convert it into witchcraft. Now, there are many, many herbs mentioned in the scripture. Herbs, remember, in Genesis 1, verses 29 and 30, are food. Some of those foods are deadly poison in excess amounts. You know, like hemlock, for instance. Hemlock, it's a green herb, but it's deadly poison. I mentioned to you tapioca, it's a deadly poison. Pokeberries are poison. Bloodroot is poison. There are a lot of these herbs that are poison in excessive amounts, but in small quantities. And this is where the druggist comes in. When he tries to figure out, along with your doctor, how much you can tolerate or how much you can take, they first take a rat, and they feed it to this rat. And then they feed increasing quantities to the rat until the rat dies. And then they take the body weight of the rat and extrapolate that into the normal body weight of a man, and then they come up with a dosage. It's really not rocket science. It's fairly simple and straightforward. So once they know what the lethal dose is, then they back off the lethal dose until they get down to what they call the efficacy, or the beneficial dose. And then they watch you and see, well, does it alleviate the pain? You know, like morphine, you know, that's a poison. You take too much of it, you overdose on it, you know, you die. And so they know about how much to give you. So they don't give a six-year-old 30-pound or 40-pound child the same amount that they'd give a 200-pound man. And so they take a look at your body weight and they kind of figure that out. Now, what they're doing here, the poppy that this heroin or this morphine came from was an herb. And if you used it as an herb, like in South America, the natives down there, they take the cocoa leaves and they chew them. That's an herb. Now, if you really want to get a concentrated hit, then what you do is you synthesize this leaf down until you get the cocaine that comes out of it. Now you've got a drug. Now you've got witchcraft. And witchcraft is a capital felony. Witchcraft is prohibited in the scripture. So what is an herb, a food given to us by God with the express intent of using that herb to alleviate pain and suffering, which indeed heroin, morphine, cocaine, marijuana do all of the above? We have decided that, well, what we'd like to do is to synthesize it, take it to an extreme, and then it feels real good until it finally kills us. Now take CNH, pure white sugar. Sugar cane isn't poison. Sugar cane is food. Sugar cane is an herb. It's green. And so what we do is we say, well, what we really want out of this? We really want a big hit of the sweet sugar that comes out of this plant. So we synthesize it down. We do the same with sugar beets. You know, we used to feed sugar beets to our cows. Cows love sugar beets. And they milk good on them. They just, you know, sugar beets are a great thing. Now, what happens is we synthesize the sugar out of the sugar beets, and then we put it in our coffee by the spoonful. See, a couple, three spoonfuls. Your body cannot digest, cannot assimilate that kind of heavy-duty drug. There's a limit to how much you can take, and so we develop diabetes. There are side effects that come from these drugs. That's the bottom line. And what's happening here with caffeine is we're suffering side effects from the caffeine overdose. We're suffering side effects from the sugar overdose. We suffer side effects, you know, from the various foods that are really herbs when we start them or start with them until we turn them into witchcraft and drugs, and then we turn ourselves into drug addicts. And, of course, it's being done by pushers. That's the chemical companies. That's the big businesses, you know, CNH, pure cane sugar. There's nothing that these people are doing overtly that they desire to kill you. I don't think anybody down at CNH Sugar is sitting there saying, God, how can we kill these people? If they killed us all, they wouldn't have any customers. Now, what they want to do is sell their product, and the product is really good. I mean, I can't think of anything better than white sugar over strawberries to draw the juice out, and then sit down, put it over a little cake over here, pour some cream on it, and eat strawberry shortcake. Boy, that's really good. Now, if you're going to put white sugar on there in place of honey or in place of something that's more natural, well, then you're taking a drug, and that drug over there is going to have some debilitating effect on your body. And it may not be right away. I mean, hell, you don't develop diabetes because you ate an ice cream cone, for crying out loud. But if you can eat enough ice cream over a long enough period of time, you can shut your pancreas. You can overload your pancreas to such a degree that it can't keep up with the insulin demands until finally you become hypoglycemic, and then you become diabetic. And then all of a sudden you got to go to the doctor because you're suffering from pain. The doctor says, we can solve that problem. Shucks, we'll just put you on straight insulin over here. You can shoot up anytime you want and make you feel real good and solve that problem for you. And it makes a lot of money for the doctor. It makes a lot of money for the drug company. Chucks, it makes a lot of money for the ice cream industry as well. So everybody benefits, and then politics comes into the program. Because like any drug pusher on a street corner, he wants to protect his turf. So if you've got a good street corner in Philadelphia and you're selling cocaine, you know, then other guys, they take a look at that and say, hey, look at old Bob over there. You know, he's down there at 14th and Main, and he's just got customers coming out his earballs. Let's go over there and kill him and then take his street corner. And so these drug pushers, you know, they get into fighting over turf. Gangs get involved because there's money involved. Well, the big manufacturers are a little more sophisticated than that. You don't see Pfizer and Merck fighting over turf. No. Those guys, they go to the Harvard Business School. They know how to get the most bang for the buck. So they go to the Congress and they say, hey, listen, we got to have regulations and controls. And so they lobby Congress. They pay Congress money. They pay those congressmen bribes in the form of campaign contributions. Bottom line, gifts and bribes. Nothing more, nothing less. And that's to stake out their turf. So let's take a look here at caffeine, and let's suppose that for the sake of our discussion here, Coca-Cola wants to put caffeine into their Coca-Cola. We'd have to ask the question of what advantage or what benefit does that have for the public, for the consumer of the Coke? And the answer is none. In fact, Coca-Cola, if you just took a look at the product itself, ought to be banned simply because it has zero nutritional value. It has absolutely no use whatsoever in the human body. But it tastes good. We don't deny that. Makes you feel real good, and the hit comes from the caffeine. So Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, all the big companies, they go to the Congress. And they lobby the Congress, and the Congress then passes laws that allow them to put caffeine into their product. Now, you're the Joe Sixpack buying public. You go to church, and your preacher over there, he's just loathing death on beer, so beer, which is a natural fermented product, which God told you that you ought to drink more of, you know, beer, wine, and then even a little vodka and Jack Daniels, you know, during the holy days. And so they say, well, don't drink alcohol, or you'll go straight to hell. And so then you got to have some substitute, but coffee's all right. You can drink coffee. And you can drink Coca-Cola. You know, these are soft drinks, you know, sarsaparilla, these call it. And so now you got the church that's pushing the caffeine for the caffeine pushers, and then you got the politics that go behind it. And so the three of them, that's the church, and they tell you don't drink hooch. And then you got the politician over here. He's taking bribes from those that want to put the caffeine into the product. Now listen to how this thing works. It's a marketing dream come true. If all you wanted to do was to make money, how would you design the perfect product? Well, it should be incredibly cheap to make, and the maker would be enormous, or the market would be enormous, basically every man, woman, and child. It would be consumable. something that people would buy every day. But to be the perfect product, it would have to be addictive. People would have to crave the product because of its effect, but more importantly, they would suffer if they did not buy it. Well, think about that. If they buy it, it's going to feel real good. If they don't buy it, it's going to feel real bad. Do you want more of it? That's the way they sell heroin on the streets. You know, if you've got it, it makes you feel real good. If you don't have it, it makes you feel real bad. So to get it, you'll go out and rob, rape, pillage, do whatever you have to do to get the money to buy the heroin. Now, importantly, this addiction would be firmly established by age 7 or 8 for maximum lifelong consumption. And with a product like that, you could make billions of dollars. Now, did you know that two of the most profitable companies in the world are the leading cola companies, Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola? Most profitable companies in the world. And that some of the fastest growing corporations today are the coffee bar chains like Starbucks. Now, these companies produce mostly beverages that have no nutritional value, and yet the explosion in the caffeine industry is unparalleled in the history of commerce. It has to do with the fact that caffeine is addictive, it's unregulated, and it is cheap. So, which is why many companies are tripping over each other trying to get more caffeine-containing products on the market. 1997 was a banner year with the launching of coffee in coffee soda, coffee sodas, canned and bottled coffees, caffeinated water. Caffeinated water. Did you get that? We're going to put caffeine in your water bottle and even caffeine beer. And it seems that America's thirst for caffeine is nearly unquenchable. And as the success of caffeinated water illustrates, it's fueled by addiction. Addiction more than by taste. In a way, these are the perfect products brought to you by companies whose only concern is that you keep buying their brands day after day, who are confident that you'll feel miserable if you don't. Now, there's an addiction. It's a true nature of addiction. Research has proven that people acquire tastes and preferences based on the psychopharmacological action of caffeine. In other words, people may wax poetic and eloquent about the aroma and the taste of coffee or the flavor of a particular soft drink, but it appears in reality that these preferences are formed subsequent to and based upon the addiction phenomenon. Now, you may tell yourself that the craving that you feel for a cup of coffee is based upon your discriminating taste. But that's simply the rationale that your mind has created to move you toward getting your fix. Research suggests that the beverage could taste like dirty socks, and you would ultimately enjoy the taste. And why is that? Because consuming the beverage alleviates the adverse effects of the withdrawal symptoms, even if the period of abstinence has been just a few hours. Notice that the strongest craving for coffee is in the morning, which corresponds to the longest period that you have been abstaining from caffeine, and that is overnight while you're sleeping. So in the name of science, caffeine industry corporations are listed as sponsors of numerous nutrition-related institutes and foundations, even though most of their products provide no essential nutrients, and even though their products have clear and well-defined and proven anti-nutrient side effects. These nutritionally worthless products replace nutrient-rich beverages in ever greater amounts for ever-increasing numbers of people, and their influence is pervasive. The caffeine industry funds public service programs, and it prints brochures ostensibly to educate the public about caffeine. The relationship between coffee and colas is a strong one because the decaffeination of coffee provides the caffeine that the soda industry needs for its product. Now, keep those consumers addicted to caffeine, and whether they like it hot or cold, one or the other of these very comparable bedfellows will get the business. So it really doesn't make any difference whether you're buying Pepsi-Cola, Coca-Cola, Folgers coffee. We don't really care as long as you're addicted to the caffeine, because you will then find a product somewhere to satisfy that caffeine need. Just like a heroin addict. You know, he'll find a source. Once he's hooked on the heroin, he'll find a source for it. That's the bottom line. Now, the Coca-Cola company started out back in the late 1800s. I think it was about 1888 or 89, something like that. And they actually put cocaine into their product. The guy that did this was a druggist, by the way, down in Atlanta, Georgia. He was a druggist. And he knew that the cocaine was addictive, and he came up with this neat drink, you know, and had cocaine in it, made people feel good. He was in the process of selling cocaine. Well, now, as time progressed along, we found there's a debilitating effect from cocaine. And so people being more interested in health around the turn of the century, they went to government. Government created an agency called the FDA, so they banned cocaine. That's where the name Coca-Cola comes from, Coke, Coca. And so the bottom line is they had to have something to put in there that would be addictive, you know, so they came up with caffeine. And the caffeine works just as well as the Coke. Now, there's a thing called serving size shenanigans. Serving size. Now, remember, the people that are out here, you know, putting together these front organizations are also doing studies and tests. And so when they do these studies, here's maybe the Coca-Cola company or the Folgers coffee company, and they're funding a test. They're funding a laboratory. It's a Harvard or Yale, and they're studying the effects of caffeine on rats or something like that. Well, when they get through with that test, when they get through, they're going to have a favorable report for their product, and it's going to be backed up by science. It's going to have a scientist assign these names. Let me explain how that ruse works. Many years ago, the John Deere Company, wanting to sell more and more machinery, this is about 1955, they came up with an idea. They said, well, we'll make what's known as a field chopper. And this field chopper over here will be pulled by a tractor, and it will chop up green feed, and it will blow it back into a wagon, which will self-unload. Now, ordinarily, a cow goes out into the field, and with her mouth, she bites the grass off, and lives her life, produces milk, and so on. Well, in the process of doing that, the cow defecates on the ground and urinates on the ground and walks on it and lays on it. And so if you took a 10-acre field of grass and you turn in 100 cows, in about 4 or 5 days, they'll graze it all off, and they'll take about half of it and utilize it, and the other half is waste. Now, the truth is the other half isn't waste because it's fertilizer. You come in and you clip it, and then the unused grass decays and goes back into the ground, and it's the food, you know, for all the nematodes and all of the organisms in the ground. But the John Deere Company looked at that and said, well, you're only getting 50% utilization of your feed. We could get 100% utilization of the feed if we chopped it and fed it in bunkers. So they invented the machine, and sure enough, it worked real good. Now, you got to sell this to the farmers. Now, farmers are pretty happy with what they've been doing for years and years. You know, they turn the cows out in the field, and the cow munches the grass off. Now, if I got to go spend thousands of dollars and buy a tractor, a chopper, and a wagon, and then chop it and build bunks, and then go spend hours a day chopping this feed and putting it into the bunks, we got to have some evidence that this is worth doing, that it's paying me money for doing this. So they went to the UC at Davis, California, and they funded a $3 million study, which is a lot of money back in 1955. So here's the John Deere Company comes over to the University of California and says, look at our equipment over here. We want you to do a study. We want you to use our equipment and chop feed, and we want you to keep records and tables, and we want you to come up with a report, and in this report we want you to show how much more feed is saved and fed to the cows, and how much more milk you get, and how much more money you make, and how fast you can buy and amortize out this machinery, and how much added return it gives to you. And so the university, you know, for $3 million, you know, those scientists will sell their soul to hell. And so they took the $3 million and they took the equipment, and they fenced off 10 acres and they chopped it, and they kept rigorous, you know, accounting records, and they kept track of how much manure comes out the one end of the cow and how much feed goes in. And then they got another test over here with cows that are chewing the grass, you know, off with their teeth. And then when the report came out 3 years later, these field choppers were just the next generation of agricultural technology that just makes money up the yin yang, and you just everybody's got to have one. At the same time, we're taking all the young kids, you know, and we're sending them to agricultural colleges all over the country and telling them, you know, sponsored, of course, by John Deere and Case and New Holland and all the equipment makers and everybody else that's got, you know, a product to sell. All right, so I worked for a guy by the name of Francis Capini, and Capini went out and he bought this and he built all these, and I was in seventh heaven. I mean, I'm a 17, 18-year-old kid. There's just nothing like sitting on 70 horsepower, blowing feed back into a wagon and chopping it and driving the tractor and unloading it, and it's just, you know, and I'm getting paid to do this. God, sit on your butt all day long and chop feed for the cows. All right, so this goes on for a couple, 3 years. And now there were some old skeptical guys, you know, around, and they didn't do it. See, they're just out here turning their cows out in the field and letting the cows eat the grass, and the cow walks home and they put the milking machines on, take the milk out, and turn the cow back down the field. While the rest of us were out here working, you know, 10, 12 hours a day, chopping feed and doing all this. And then about 1960, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, log in there, then, you know, some of the guys that were out field chopping started putting the numbers together. And what did they find out? They found out that they were losing money by chopping feed. That by the time you bought the equipment and you chopped the feed and paid the labor and fed it to the cows, yeah, you got more milk and you got more feed utilization, but the cost was greater than the benefit. Well, then how come the University of California turned out a bogus study? Because they got paid $3 million for doing it. And I see this with the Chrysler Corporation, you know. They'll go out and they'll have some, they'll form a corporation. They'll make some testing company. And then this testing company tests these automobiles. And then they'll advertise in their advertisement, Dodge is number one, according to the ABC company, and doing its test. Well, Ford does the same thing. So Ford, built Ford tough. It's really Ford's number one, according to the ZYX company's report. So, well, who in the hell is the ZYX company? It's a company that's set up by the Ford Motor Company. Now, come on, kids, let's grow up and get real here. Start using our heads for a change. I'm not opposed to the Ford people selling automobiles, but they're liars. It's a deception. John Deere, you know, they need to make machinery, and they need to sell machinery. They later on, they gave up those field choppers. I don't see them in operation anywhere now. But they're making road building equipment, you know, and things. You know, there's things, you know, in life that we can use and need, and they actually are beneficial. Field choppers were not one of them. Now the synthesizing of caffeine is totally unnecessary. We can get all the caffeine that we need out of tea, chocolate, coffee. I mean, you don't have to decaffeinate coffee so that you got a product over here that doesn't have caffeine, and then sell decaffeinated coffee to one group of people and then sell caffeine to another group. By the way, all that decaffeinated coffee, it has caffeine in it. All decaffeinated coffee has caffeine, just doesn't have as much. So you have to drink 2 or 3 times as much. It reminds me of putting filters on cigarettes. Now, kids, the reason that we smoke is that we want the nicotine from the tobacco in our bloodstream. You understand that? That's the purpose for smoking. It has nothing to do with taste. It has everything to do with getting nicotine in the blood system. You could inject it. But the delivery system of choice seems to be, let's light it up and inhale it into our lungs, and then it'll go directly into our bloodstream. Okay, that's the purpose behind it. Now, we discovered that there's a lot of tar in these cigarettes, and that the tar, you know, turns your lungs black. And so some advertising guy comes up with a real neat idea. And so he says, hey, I'll tell you what we need to do is put a filter on a cigarette. It was the filter cigarette was the greatest invention for the tobacco industry since the invention of tobacco by the Indians. Here's why. First of all, they fund studies that show lungs. And I remember I read it in Reader's Digest, and I saw pictures of a lung that was black and a lung that was pink. And I was a smoker and says, oh my God, my lungs must be black. I don't know if a black lung is healthier or more unhealthy than a pink lung, but anyway, they convinced me that tar and nicotine was really bad for you. Now, I want to continue smoking, and so I think that it's good taste. That's why I smoke Camel Studs. But now I'm going to smoke a filter tip cigarette. And so I smoke this filter tip cigarette, and it filters out about 90% of the nicotine. Now, what I'm smoking for is to get this nicotine. I think I'm smoking for good taste because I'm discriminating smokers. But I'm really addicted to nicotine, and what I really need is a fix. So I smoke one, and it's not satisfactory. So I have to smoke a second one, a third one, a fourth. And you have to smoke four or five times as many filter cigarettes. So we end up, instead of smoking one pack of Camel Studs a day, we have to smoke two or three packs of filter cigarettes a day. Well, hell, they all sell for the same price. So the tobacco company is selling two or three times as many cigarettes to deliver the same amount of nicotine. Now, isn't that just real special? And hell, we've been buying those filter cigarettes, you know, from day one. Now, look, kids, if what you're looking for is a hit of heroin, do you want to water this heroin down by 50% by mixing it with sugar? No, no. You want to buy it and then use half as much. Now, watch how this thing really works. They used to have a cigar, and it was an Italian cigar called a Tuscana. I think that's the way to pronounce it, Tuscana cigar. I mean, that thing had nicotine dripping out of both ends when you lit it up. That was I was an old-timey smoker, and my first drag on one of those cigars over there put me into convulsions. I thought I was going to die. I thought I was gasping for breath. And this old guy over here, he kind of smiling, laughing at me, you know. And, I mean, kids, you only had about two drags on one of those cigars, man, and that was like smoking about a pack of Camel Studs. So, you know, you ever seen these guys, you know, they take a stub of a cigar, and they light up the stub, they take three drags, and then it goes out. That's because cigars have so much nicotine in them, you light it up, you take three drags, and that's like a half a pack of cigarettes. And a cigar only costs you 50 cents. In fact, in those days, it only cost a nickel. You could buy a White Owl, you know, for a nickel. Okay, so let's be intelligent, and let's start looking at who in the hell these people are that are pushing this stuff and where these studies are coming from. Because this book that I suggested that you get a copy of in Chapter 7 has this politics and pushers, and it reveals who it is that's doing what to who. Now, if you're addicted to caffeine, the last thing you want to do is water the stuff down. I mean, hell, you want to get the full effect. I had a guy in class here one day. He's drinking a can of soda pop over here, and I'd never seen it before. It said Jolt on the side. And I said, what are you drinking over there, Ted? And he said, well, I'm drinking Jolt. And I said, well, why are you drinking Jolt instead of Coca-Cola? And he said, because it has double the caffeine and double the sugar. It says so right here on the label. I said, let me see that. I looked at the label, and sure enough, right on the can of Jolt, it says double the caffeine and double the sugar, which is the reason why you want to smoke. You want to smoke cigars because you can get more nicotine out of a cigar than you can three or four packs of cigarettes, and you get it for 50 cents. So when cigarettes were 30 cents a pack, you could buy a cigar, a Roy Tan cigar, for 50 cents. And that Roy Tan cigar would last me for three or four days. That's how much nicotine was in it. Then if you really need a nicotine hit, I mean, if you're really, you know, really hooked, you buy these Tuscana cigars, and I'm telling you, three drags off of one of those will almost put you into orbit. All right, so it's not only cheaper, it's a cheaper, faster, easier, better way to get your hit of nicotine. Now listen, the people that are selling caffeine, they know that. The people that are selling cigarettes know that. The people that sell cigars all know that. And that's why they're out here marketing their product. And you're motivated by your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Your lust is your addictions. You're motivated by these five motivators. Whether you like it or not, that's the way life is. Now let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's eight schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that these authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour, they may be hostile or political or religious, they could be economic or sectarian, they can be racial or ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent now the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station, which means that they're normal and I'm off base. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. I guess that's what being mainstream is all about. Mainstream doesn't have any set views one way or the other. Now, the guy that wrote Caffeine Blues, Stephen Chernyski, he's got some real hardcore opinions. He thinks caffeine's real bad. And he's not just whistling Dixie through a straw hat. This caffeine, in its drug form, in its synthesized witchcraft drug form, is bad, bad, bad news. Now, caffeine in its natural form as an herb, you know, is probably pretty good. Taken in moderation, I would caution you again that moderation is subjective. A heroin addict, you know, the rest of us sitting over here watching some guy shoot up with heroin and say, this guy's out of control. Well, some guy that's lighting up a little stick of tobacco over here wrapped up in a piece of paper is out of control also. Stop and think about it. He's addicted to nicotine. And nicotine probably has some real beneficial effects taken in moderation to cure some disease or some symptom that your body develops. I'm sure that nicotine is an herb. And Genesis 1:29 and 30, I mean, here's your creator. He gave you every green herb on planet Earth. Some of them are poison. He figured that you'd be able to control that. He gave that to you, see if you could handle it. Some of us can, some of us can't. I couldn't handle that nicotine bug or that nicotine product over there. It overwhelmed me. It addicted me, and I couldn't give it up. So I had to go at it, you know, pretty hot and heavy, and then I finally kicked the habit, and I don't touch tobacco products, because if I did, I think I'd get hooked again, and then I'd be addicted thing. So these addictive things, alcohol can become addictive. A lot of times people, you know, I'm an alcoholic, you know, I can't control my drinking. Oh, okay. Maybe you better leave it alone. Now, some people can handle it a little better than others. I talked to a guy one time, I mentioned him here on the air. His name was Frank Roach, and old Frank, you know, every once in a while he'd say, hey, give me one of them Tillamakes. What he was asking for is a tailor-made. That was a cigarette that came out of a package rather than a Bull Durham that you rolled your own. So, and old Frank, you know, he'd light up one weed, and he'd smoke it, maybe 3 days later, hey, give me one of them Tillamakes. Meanwhile, I'm smoking a pack a day. Most people that smoke a pack a day. Some people smoke more. If you smoke filter cigarettes, you probably smoke more in a pack a day. That's why I told you. I said, hell, you know, if you need nicotine because you're addicted to nicotine, hell, buy a cigar. Three hits on that cigar and you're taken care of, partner. It'll save you a lot of money in the process, and you can get your nicotine hit and or fix, and you'll be happier, and it'll save you some money at the same time. Meanwhile, back on the farm, it's in the name of science. And this caffeine industry and the corporations are listed as sponsors of these numerous nutrition-related institutes. So they put fancy names on nutrition. And these guys aren't selling nutrition, they're selling caffeine. They're selling an addiction. Right? I want you to understand that. Okay. Now we get down to the serving sizes. Now you may recall from Chapter 1 that the caffeine industry would like you to believe that a serving of soda equals 6 ounces and a serving of coffee equals 5 ounces. Okay. I mentioned this earlier. I've been addicted to both. I never drank a 5-ounce cup of coffee. And neither has anybody else. The 5-ounce cup of coffee is called a serving. And the reason they have the serving down there low is because they know that you think of a serving as a cup of coffee. And so one guy, he's got a 20-ounce mug, another guy's got a 16-ounce mug, another guy's got a 12-ounce mug. And the serving size, they tell you, is 5 ounces. Same thing with soda pop, you know. They say they put on the label, put on the can, you know, a serving is. And so when they do these studies, you know, through their phony corporate study corporations, you know, or their front organization, their serving size is ridiculously low, and they say, well, per serving. Well, then they don't tell you that, and then you think of a serving. Well, what do you use as a serving? It's totally subjective. Totally subjective. So the so-called safety recommendations are therefore based on consumers drinking half a can of soda or half a cup of coffee. And another tactic used by caffeine promoters is to translate dose amounts incorrectly. For example, they'll report that a caffeine dose of 10 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. That's milligrams per kilogram of body weight. Now, causes significant harm to a rat. But then they claim that such a dose is the equivalent of 12 cups of coffee to a 70 kilogram, that's 165 pound man. So then the reader, including other scientists who do not question the data, therefore reason that there is very little risk. You follow that? So they come along and they say, well, this is the equivalent, you know, of 10 milligrams per kilogram for a rat. And it causes significant harm to a rat. But then they come along and they tell you, but this is like drinking 12 cups of coffee and 165-pound man. Well, now you're probably not drinking 12 cups a day. However, many people do. Now, all of you truck drivers out there are drinking 12 cups of coffee a day. I never saw a truck driver that didn't drink 12 cups a day. Furthermore, when I was in the office at Atlantis Manufacturing Company, I think that I probably drank 6 or 8 cups a day. I mean, when I was out driving around, you go into, let's just pick a place, It could be Thriftway Lumber Company. They got a coffee bar in there. All businesses have free coffee, don't they? At least all the ones that I used to trade at did. And so I'd go into Dick Alloway and I'd have a cup of coffee. I'd go down to Thriftway Lumber Company and I'd walk in there, fix a cup of coffee, and then I'd walk over to some other guy, George Hodge Lumber Company, and he's got a coffee machine. Hell, in our company, we always had a coffee bar. Customers come in, they pour themselves a cup of coffee. It's just being sociable, isn't it? All right, well, by the end of the day, you start adding up all that coffee that you're drinking over there, and it adds up to 10 or 12 cups a day. No big deal, but then there's symptoms that start coming off of this. So start thinking about, how much coffee am I drinking over here? And then remember that the dosage that they're recommending, 5 or 6 ounces, is phony coming out of the chute. Now, in fact, you can't simply compare the weight of a rat to the weight of a man and arrive at an equivalent dose. Rats and men have far different metabolic rates, just like a bird. A bird, their heart rate's around, 150 beats a minute. Their temperature is 105 degrees. We use the term eats like a bird. Hell, birds eat their weight every day in food. Did you know that? So here's this little bird out here, 3 or 4 ounces. He eats 3 or 4 ounces of food every day. A hummingbird, it weighs an ounce. He eats an ounce of food a day. Human beings weigh 165 pounds, but you don't eat 165 pounds of food because your metabolism is different. So comparing a man to a rat, you've got to compare the metabolism as well. And let's be intelligent people here. Now, nobody ever tells you that. See? So what they do is they come up with numbers. There's this old Mark Twain had this neat saying. He said, figures don't lie, but liars figure. That's true. Liars figure. Figures don't lie. It's the liars that are figuring. Came up with another neat one. He said there's liars, there's damn liars, and then there's statistics. That's another factor. So what we do is we put the numbers together the way we want to put them together. I remember one time I was selling water beds. And it was during, remember 1980? 79, 80, 81. Remember when the interest rate went up to about, 21%? And inflation's running 13% and interest rates are 21%, and I'm trying to sell product over here. So I was hooked up with a couple of three, like Household Finance, Beneficial Finance, the Associates. These are called finance companies. And they charge 36% interest. So the legal rate of interest is 36% set by the legislature. So then we back off of that. We don't charge 36%, we charge 32%. But we have to come up with a sales gimmick. So when you'd come in the store, they'd say, what's the interest rate? And we would say 12% add-on interest. And where can you get 12% interest these days? And people, and I was in the business from 79, 80, 81, 3 years. And the 3 years that gimmick was going on, I never had a single customer ever ask me, what does add-on interest mean? Nobody ever asked me. But it was the law. We had to say it was 12% add-on. The real effective simple interest coordinate with that was 32%. So you were really paying 32% interest, but the contract said 12% add-on, made you feel real good. I never had a single customer come back and say, why, you lying, thieving SOB, the interest rate's 32% and you deceived me. Nobody ever did that. And it taught me a valuable lesson. Americans can't count. I've never met an American that can count, and I've never met a Jew that could. All Jews can count. All Chinamen can count. There's no such thing as a Chinese or a Jew that can't count. Boy, those boys know how to do their percentages, and that's why they're all in the business world. And that's why all you Gentiles are running around out here complaining about the Jews, because you can't count. You went to public school, and a Jew can. And he takes advantage of the fact that he knows his numbers. And then the rest of us are sitting over here complaining about him. There's nothing to complain about. It takes two to tango. You had to sign the contract, sucker. And when you signed the contract, you agreed to pay that interest. Now, if you obeyed God and kept his commandments, you wouldn't practice usury and interest. And the first time that somebody said, I want you to pay 0.1% per century interest, you'd say, hell no, it's against the law. I don't pay interest. I'm a businessman. I've been doing this for 23 years. I haven't paid a nickel's worth of interest in 23 years. Well, not since 1970. I'll take that back. 1980. Maybe I got to rethink this. About 1983. I think maybe 78, but certainly not since 1983 have I paid a nickel's worth of interest to anybody. So 83, 93, 103, 4, 5, 6, 7, 24 years. 24 years. Now, there's ample opportunity. I don't have any credit cards. I can't handle credit cards. Remember, I'm a credit card holic, and so you give me one of them credit cards, and I'm dead. You got me. So I got to swear off of those. And so if I had a credit card, I'd be out paying usury interest because I'd max that thing out, and then I wouldn't be able to pay it. And that's what these guys are doing here with caffeine. They do it with cocaine. They do it with heroin. They do it with credit cards. They appeal to your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Those are your weaknesses in life, and so they're able to jerk your chain. Now, in fact, you can't simply compare the weight of a rat and the weight of a man to arrive at an equivalent dose. You got to have the metabolic or the metabolism of the two animals considered in the equation. Now, scientists working on this problem long ago arrived at a more accurate way of comparing people to rodents using what is termed metabolic weight. When this important factor is considered, the 10 milligrams per kilogram dose translates to 4 6-ounce cups of coffee or 2 mugs, quite a different story. So it's not 12, boys and girls, it's two, which becomes debilitating. One leading researcher made the assertion that these errors, intentional or unintentional, perpetrate misleading impressions about the safety of caffeine. And there was a study done on that, and it's footnote number 4. And so, Caffeine Blues is the book, and Stephen Chernisky is the author. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. I'm pretty sure that's probably where we picked this up. And I'm guessing it's probably under $20. Chapter 7 will tell you who the pushers are and how they're jerking your chain. Now, for the most part, the average guy on the street, you know, if you're driving a truck down the highway right now, you know, you really don't give a rat's reckon one way or the other. You know, it's of no concern to you. But one of these days, partner, you're going to develop a symptom. Now, let's run through these symptoms again. When you develop cataracts on your eyes, or glaucoma, or gout, or you have erectile dysfunction, or your sperm count goes down, or you suffer from allergies, asthma, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, or autoimmune disease, or you have prostate dysfunction, or adrenal gland dysfunction, or hypoglycemia, diabetes, aging, headache, ulcers, irritable bowel syndrome, heartburn, acid reflux. Yeah, have you been watching? Acid reflux, acid reflux, acid reflux. Excessive caffeine, excessive caffeine, excessive caffeine. That's what your trouble is. Acid reflux disease, they call that. Constipation, coronary disease, heart attack, and stroke. Now, you'll come down with one of those symptoms if you overdo this caffeine thing. And then when those symptoms come upon you, then you can sit back and make a more intelligent decision. Oh, yeah. I remember I listened to this guy on the radio one time, and he said, hey, caffeine, pay attention here. Now, here again, caffeine in its natural herbal form can actually be too much for you in the same way that alcohol can. No drunkard shall enter into the kingdom of heaven. And they accused the Messiah of being a wine bibber. They came to him and said, hey, this guy's a wine bibber over here. The Messiah was a wine drinker. He drank hooch. That's why I say the Baptists, they're more righteous than the Messiah, because no alcohol has crossed my lips, said one famous Baptist evangelist or Baptist preacher. I always laugh when I see that over there. Kind of reminds me of Judy Hartson in the fourth grade. God, that girl was righteous. That was the most righteous girl I ever ran into in my life in fourth grade, Judy Hartson. I mean, that girl never did anything wrong. It was always reporting everybody else to the teacher. And I was number one on her list. I don't think a day went by that she didn't report me to Mr. Witt. I got reported so often. I don't even think the teacher wasted his time asking me questions half the time because he knew it came from Judy Hartson, the school's number one righteous bitch. If there was a righteous bitch in life, that was Judy. God bless her anyway. God, she's got to be a little old lady by now. A study titled Caffeine-Containing Beverages and the Prevalence of Hypertension appeared in the Journal of Hypertension. 90% of readers only skim the summary or the abstract, which says this. Listen, we found evidence that caffeine intake was positively related to an increased blood pressure, but the effect was small. There was no evidence that regular coffee intake increases the risk of being classified as hypertensive. Now, that's hypertensive is high blood pressure. This information is then picked up by the media, and millions of people read that regular caffeine intake is not a risk factor in hypertension, high blood pressure. But what did the study really prove? The study proved nothing except that poor research can get published in good journals. A careful reading of the entire document reveals that the investigators in this study did not measure normal caffeine intake at all. The mean intake of their subjects was calculated to be only 181 milligrams per day, the equivalent of one strong cup of coffee, far below the 250 to 300 milligrams per day considered normal by other researchers and surveyors. What's more, there's no reason to believe that this calculation is anywhere near accurate, and that's because they didn't measure caffeine intake at all, but rather the intake of coffee, and they did not discriminate between regular and decaffeinated coffee. Now, reliable data from other surveys tells us that approximately 20% of these subjects were actually drinking decaf. No wonder the increase in blood pressure was small. And the final flaw in this research is revealed when you learn that blood pressure readings were taken without determining the time of the subject's last intake of coffee. So they took the blood test or the blood pressure test at random times, took it from 20% of subjects that were drinking decaf, and it wasn't the subject matter of the study at all. And so then somebody picks that up and they report that in USA Today. Now you're reading through USA Today and you read the condensed version of the reporter who read the report incorrectly. In fact, the report may have been put out by the coffee industry itself and written or conducted in such a way that it had flawed results, which favors caffeine consumption, which I've already mentioned. These are called the pushers. You know, when you're pushing, you don't tell people objectively what some of the side effects are, do you?
I mean, for crying out loud, if you're a car salesman, are you going to tell the customer that this transmission has 110,000 miles on it and that the average life expectancy of an automatic transmission is 100,000 miles and this one is still going? Boy, this was a good transmission. But its life is measured now in miles, you know, just a few more miles, 5, 10, 15,000 miles. This transmission is going to need to be replaced, isn't it? So we don't say anything at all about automatic transmissions, do we, when we're selling a car that's got 100,000 miles on it? Now, do we? No, we just tell them the good news. Look at the tires. They're brand new. I bought a pickup here the other day, and the guy that sold it to me put new tires on it. And he pointed that out. He said, look at this. It's got new tires. God, that's wonderful. But then, you know, later on, the starter went out. And that cost $211. I just got the bill the other day, $211, put a new starter on this machine. Well, the machine had about 200,000 miles on it. Well, I imagine that starter's been on there the whole 200,000 miles. Well, I imagine it was about time for that starter to go out, and we needed a new starter. I noticed that the guy, when he sold it to me, didn't tell me anything about the starter. My God, it's got this wonderful starter on here. There wasn't any need for him to talk about a starter. I might start asking questions like, well, how long do those starters normally last? Well, it lasts about 100,000 miles. This rig's got 200,000 on it, and it's got the original starter. You know, that means that starter is on its last legs. It's about ready to go out. That's what the caffeine people are doing. That's what all drug pushers do. That's what any salesman does. He strokes you, tells you what you want to hear, makes you feel real good, never tells you anything that's objective. Now, that's a salesman. Now, if we want to be honest, you know, let's cover the subject from both sides. Let's look at both sides of the coin so that you and I can make an intelligent decision. I'm not here to tell you not to drink caffeine. I'm just telling you to think about it and then make an intelligent decision. Remember the book again? It's called Caffeine Blues. Caffeine Blues. Wake Up to the Hidden Dangers of America's Number One Drug by Stephen Chernisky. Hey, I'm out of time again, kids. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. But you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to get yours by going to the webpage, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.